events are your launch pad for a lot of things that you're doing throughout the year. You do the session once and then that's it. And then you have to come up with like 85 more webinar topics. Why are you doing that to yourself? Use the stuff that you spent time doing for the event. And yeah, you can tweak like anything that's seasonal, but use that. Use those campaigns that you have at the event as a launch pad for the rest of the year.
Great events create great brands. But pulling off an event that engages, excites, and connects audiences? Well, that takes a village. And we're that village. My name is Alyssa.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Felicia.
And you're listening to Great Events, the podcast for all event enthusiasts, creators, and innovators in the world of events and marketing.
Hello, everyone. What has been going on in this wide, wide world of events? My name is Alyssa, and I am joined by co-hosts Rachel and Felicia for us to continue our conversation on what's trending in the world of meetings and events in 2025. So with that, we're going to just jump right into this conversation because we are very much knee deep in this combo already and continue with trend number six. So last episode, we went through our first five trends. Trend number six, hotels and venues adopt smarter tools for data privacy. Interesting. This one, I feel like may be coming out of that huge cybersecurity takedown that happened in the summer of last year. It just seems like the whole world is just a little bit more attuned to data and the value of data and how precious this data is, especially when these cyber attacks are seemingly more prevalent and are on larger scales at this point. I know Rachel's been working really closely with our procurement team to kind of adapt some solutions that protect our own organization from breaches like this. So, Rachel, you want to comment on that a little
bit? Yeah, I think this trend isn't very new. I think it's just a continuation of policies like GDPR and CCPA and things like that we need to take into account. But one of the things that we put into place like a year or so ago was just looking at when we submitted a vendor request form or a contract for a new event, one of the things we have to mark off is, will this vendor venue get access to any data, meaning any contact data or financial data that our company can vet that? And that, I feel like, is standard practice, hopefully, at most corporate companies. If it's not standard practice within your events organization, you probably need to ask about that because there's a lot that can go wrong when you're handling attendee lists. That's why using an event tech system, shameless plug, but it's true. That's one of the reasons why you use something for attendee data that is just a little bit more secure than using Excel's, especially around rooming or especially around when you're using credit card information or personal information. There's more partnership between the venues that you're working with and the systems that you're using to, you know, encrypt certain things that no one should see in between systems, right? Like there's credit card tokenization, which, you know, helps you and me not see the credit card information, which everybody should expect when they're registering for something. You don't want the random employee at the company that's planning the event to see your data there. So I don't think it's new. I think it's just that hotels are cracking down more because they're worried about those liabilities. So, and a lot of that comes through events, right? Like, so there's just more to be wary of when it comes to data sharing, that if you're using technology, if you're using a passkey, if you're using a registration platform that is secure, I think that you're mostly covered by those protections, hopefully, right? But I know that hotels are really, really worried and focus on that because of all these high profile data breaches that have happened.
And their reputations on the line, right? Like if a major chain was to experience something as large as what we saw in 2024, it could impact business for a very long time. So especially on the group business side of the house, right?
And I think that's why this trend is a trend. You know, the more I'm listening to this, the more I'm thinking, actually, typically hotels haven't been, you know, the first to put their hands up and say, hey, let's invest in new technology. And maybe that is the change. I remember being at an event, an MPI event, and we were hosting hoteliers and it was great. I didn't realize I could use this. We host events and she's just looking at what's new, what can I do? And I think maybe that is the difference. Why it's a trend in 2025 of like adoption maybe is the new thing for our hotel friends.
Love it. All right, let's talk about something that definitely is a trend. This word or this phrase, return on relationship, which we've seen a lot coming into 2025. Trend number 7 on our list of 9 that we're going through over the course of these 2 episodes here. Trend number 7, return on relationships is going to be an important metric. Interesting. How are we going to measure this?
Well, I think the new acronym is ROR, right? Return on relationship, just because we needed another acronym in our tool belt.
Because we couldn't figure out ROI, so we just rebranded it to ROR.
ROR. Yeah. Everyone wants to have relationship events where they go and they just have an experience with their account or attendees or whatever it is. And they want these like personalized connections and they want to engage with people, whether it's like taking them to a game. But I think for marketers, you're like, well, how do you track if it was successful or not? And I think that that's been the biggest challenge for us. We've added a ton of relationship, let's call them shows that we attend, and then relationship events that we host. There's a ton that have been added. We used to track them the same way that we track all of our other lead gen shows or events. And we were seeing a diminished return, and we're like, maybe we're not tracking it the right way. Maybe we need to just invest into the relationship to grow that engagement with that customer, grow that community with that customer, whatever it is, and track that differently. And I think that that's been the shift for us. So I just talked about this in our last podcast, but on the data side, we've just reorganized our total event program to define every single event as a lead gen event, a brand awareness event, or an engagement or a relationship show. And this is the first year where we're really, really going to start like really tracking this. So it's, you know, we've always had it, but we're now putting, you know, pen to paper saying this is what it is. And we're going to start tracking the trends with that. And I think I'm really excited to see how it plays out, because now that we have these subcategories, we're not lumping everything into one tactic. We're saying within this tactic, there's multiple engagement types. So, you know, if it's just purely a lead gen show or purely a brand awareness play, we can now track those differently and have different benchmarks for those things. We know that we're forward investing in relationships, and maybe we don't get as many MQLs from this particular relationship show because it's not meant to be a lead gen show. It's meant to be a relationship show, and then tracking the success based off of that.
What I love about this trend is that it's saying it's an important metric. That phraseology, I think it's super important, because we've been building community for a long time. We knew relationships were important. But to say that this particular metric is going to be important, I think is where, you know, like Rachel was saying, this is going up to C-level now. The C-suite and looking and saying, okay, well, what? Oh, there is a relationship show. Okay, fine. Accepting of that, you know, whereas before we would kind of say, yeah, but it was a brand awareness or it was a relationship. And they were like, they were kind of looking at it sideways, whereas now it's accepted. And even, you know, recently we had one of our biggest C-suiters, I won't say his name, but he was saying, okay, well, how are we going to go to Canlyon next year? Or how are we going to Manifest? And these are like events where it's all about building relationships. It's all about community. It's all about party on the beach. It really isn't a traditional B2B, you know, in a conference center. It's much more about how do I make friends with the community that I want to make friends with. So that's from the business to another business owner, but in a nice environment. But also, if you're doing it and you're enabling like those hosted events, people want a sense of security. So our audiences want to know, oh, I'm going to see John there. Oh, I'm going to see Sarah there. Oh, I'm going to see so-and-so there. That true community, I think the board is loving it. They're like, yes, we get it. This is important. How many of them are you doing? Tell me, where are we going?
Invest more. I think the big piece for me here is how we're telling that story. The executive space is so used to kind of the revenue side, like revenue and costs. They speak in dollars, right? Like that's the currency of conversation. So this return on a relationship feels fluffy, for lack of a better word, but there's value here. And it's telling these value stories in the absence of dollars being part of it. And I think it's a tricky thing to navigate. But I do, to your point, Felicia, see a shift in the big wigs at corporations and at any organization, really, associations, nonprofits are following suit as well, to see the value of events beyond just the hard dollars, the cents, you know, how this kind of all adds up. I know I'm saying dollars, pounds, euros, what's up for your currency?
But even for hoteliers, right? For a hotelier to build up a relationship with event planner is gold. That relationship means that planner might book you again and again. kind of like, oh, I know that room. I get the team. I get it. You know, so we often, you know, we'll take a bunch of planners to a hotel and the hotel partner will really partner with us because they know the value of building relationship with those people that are coming to their venue. So,
yeah. Do we think this is different than return on engagement? Like, are we kind of just changing the word engagement or how is this new? I'm asking you both. I'm jostling this in my mind right now.
I think relationship is solidifying something deeper than a moment's engagement. Like, you know, we track these engagement points, right? So, oh, great, you did this, you did this. Fine, for that event or that moment, you were super switched on, super engaged, great. But to come again and be like, oh, I want to follow you, or I want to know what you're saying next, or where should we meet next? I think it just shifts the balance. And maybe that's why the executives are like, that's important. If someone is building a relationship with me, that's important. These engagement points were great, but they sound like planner things or marketer things. I don't think they could tap into that in the same way.
I'm thinking of like a traditional sales funnel. It's like almost like capitalizing on the conversion point, right? The conversion of when one becomes something, right? To be defined as a way. Interesting. That's an interesting one that we should talk about more throughout the year. Because I think that it is a trendy term, like the return to office, the return to relationships, the return to in person, the return to all these things, right? So let's just keep an eye on that one throughout the year. Because I think it's an important metric. Like, let's really figure out how we tell those stories, how we define that, how we bring that, how we make that available.
I mean, that's something that I can report back on from now we've defined it for our events program. Maybe we look at it at the end of the year and say, okay, if you remember our trends, we kept a pulse on relationship. And maybe there's further to your point, Alyssa, further documentation that needs to happen. So does that mean that renewals happen? Does that mean that they got more engaged with you on a marketing side? Did they download more content? I don't know what the answer is yet, but I think that there's going to be ways that we can look at it. Did they come to more of your events? Did they stay longer? I think that you can track some of those things, all the tracking we have, and look at if those relationship shows, the ones that you're tracking as relationship, are really working or not.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. Trend number 8. This shifts gears a little bit for us, but it's very, very much top of mind for, I would say, the meetings and events universe here. Technology will be helping event professionals stay ahead of accessibility laws. And I'm going to underscore laws on this one because I think that's the huge trend and the shift here is that this is no longer something that is a like to have. It's a must have when there are legalities that are taking shape in this space as well. We fortunately have Felicia on here, who is somewhat of a subject matter expert on the accessibility space. She's been an internal champion of ours. And has done many episodes, if you are interested, on the accessibility conversation over the past year or so. But Felicia, what's your take on this?
It's been something that, you know, similar to GDPR, has been on our radar for a while because the Accessibility Act, the European Accessibility Act, was actually passed in 2019. So it's a long, long time ago that it was passed. But the difference is 2025 is the time when you will be fined. It actually comes in enforcement. Exactly. Like we did a session, Stephen Cutchin did a session called Don't Get Sued. I loved it. I love the title because that's what it is. You could be fined up to €1 million, you know, for breaching the Accessibility Act. You know, we won't go into the details on this podcast, but, you know, we've got web content accessibility guidelines that we've been following for a while now. So that should just tell you it is from your website that you build all the way to on-site that you attend and back to your website again. I think that's the best way to look at it because it's end-to-end accessibility. If somebody cannot understand, you know, what you're offering because your screen reader isn't working properly or, you know, you're blending colors or you just think about it and think about how is someone going to access your event from the beginning, then on-site. I hate to say it becomes more obvious on-site, but I think that's the thing that people most think about because they start thinking about, you know, wheelchair access, but that is not it. You know, there are people that are suffering from vertigo at your event. There are people that are having all sorts of, you know, neurodiversities at your event. It has to be end to end. And so I would say with that, to not scare people, and then I'll stop talking. I think that isn't, I have to know exactly what every single person's disability is that comes to my event if they're not disclosing it. But giving them a way to disclose it is what's going to become more important, you know, in reg forms or just making sure maybe at your desk it's, hey, talk to me. Come and talk to me if you need to talk to me. It's a quiet room. It's things like that. Just making sure it's available.
So I think a lot of planners are doing this really well already and opening the door for requests. So we make it very open on our website, like what we offer from an accessibility perspective, but it's beyond the on-site, like Felicia said. But I think the on-site experience or virtual experience is still important to do with the laws coming out, making sure that you're actually being inclusive that way. I think people need to pay a little bit more attention, but just something as simple as what are some things that you need from us as planners to help you just can make a world of a difference. And you list out some of the major things like, you know, hearing capabilities, accessibility for wheelchairs, visual services that you can offer. And then you can put other, because sometimes there's a disability that might not be a visible disability that you know of, that a lot of disabilities aren't visible, right? There's neurodiversity, things that you need to include. There's things that you need to, for strobe lights and things like that, you flag or insert anything here kind of thing. But what if you have it in your reg page to accommodate for some of those things and people can write in what they need, and then you can let them know if that you can accommodate them or not. Some of them you have to accommodate. But what I would say is, this is kind of outside the trends, but it's kind of a plea to the venues. If you work closely with your venue or your CVB, if you're doing a citywide, for example, they should have certain tools that you can use, you know, and if you notice a gap, I've been calling people out like, hey, you don't have any sort of wheelchair services on your website that help your guests. For the most part, most venues are good at it, but there's things that aren't currently done in North America. For example, if you wanted to get a stage ramp, most of the time you're going to have to buy that or rent that from an AV company. I think that this should be standard that a venue owns and offers. There's certain things that I personally think that should be on the venue side of having that available for planners in their toolkit to use, right? Like having a better floor plan with, you know, layouts that are easier to understand, you know, sharing what's in the room. For example, fridges should be in everyone's room because you don't know if someone has, I have medication that needs to be refrigerated, for example. Mothers that are nursing need fridges. Like there's just so many things like that that I think venues need to get tapped into if they're not already.
Well, and I think this kind of dovetails nicely from how we started this conversation, where hotels and venues are adapting to the needs of data privacy and security. Maybe this trend will look a little different next year, right? That hotels and venues are now adapting to accessibility laws as well, right? Certainly they're meeting requirements, but there are other things beyond the spoken that can assist in the planner side and also the attendee side and supporting those with needs.
It's like up to 20,000 euros per violation, right? So what are some violations? Not creating consistent navigation across a mobile app, not enabling speech recognition in a mobile app, not providing necessary supporting documentation for what you're doing, or not developing an accessible user interface. So like a lot of these things, we started as technology that can help you with these things. You get the right technology, you should be able to, similar to GDPR, to remove some of the stress of like, oh, how am I going to make sure the interface is correct? So what a... just work with the right provider and that should give you some ease. What's the short thing? WCAG. They're the word guidelines. I wish it was a word. And I know that, you know, like I mentioned, Stephen Fetchers, he's been working so hard to ensure that we are compliant.
I'm not even sure if you said what you just said was English or not. Are you talking about the WCAG Web Content Accessibility Guidelines? Okay.
All right, ladies, let's round this one out. Trend number 9. Totally different. Left field over here. We're going all over the map today. Event content will fuel year-round campaigns. Another one that I feel like is not so new. Yeah, I feel like we've been talking about this one since basically the pandemic, right?
Let me tell you, when you see people taking notes when you're talking about this at an event, you know that no one has been doing it properly. Like, I will get on stage and be like, you should use your content all year round. You see people go, oh...
brains explode.
Yeah, like you are both right. It's not new, but are people doing it? And I think 2025 is the, yeah, people are doing it. People are going to be doing that a lot. So I think it was more like, this is what we should be doing. It's what we could be doing. similar to the AI conversation. We could be doing this, we should be doing that. But actually, I love, you know, in the last podcast, Rachel, you spoke about quantifying it. How much time are we saving by not making net new? Like, how much are we going to make net new versus repurpose? I think that might be that difference of being able to measure it and say how much time you saved and what we should do and what are the SOPs so that we don't constantly make content. It's something we're doing. I don't want to make half as much content this year in 25 as we did in 24. We cannot sustain it. It's too much. So we do need to just be more sustainable.
I mean, it's a pet peeve. I mean, for one, events are your launch pad for a lot of things that you're doing throughout the year. And then my biggest beef, this was years ago, I mean, we're doing a good job of this now, but it's just you do the session once and then that's it. And then you have to come up with like 85 more webinar topics. Like, why are you doing that to yourself? Use the stuff that you spent time doing for the event. And yeah, you can tweak like anything that's seasonal or anything that's, you know, a stat that changes every quarter in those decks, but use that, use those campaigns that you have at the event as a launch pad for the rest of the year. I mean, especially your bigger events, when you have the captive audiences, use that as your campaign. This to me is being a trend is like, it should just be a standard practice, in my opinion.
I have something to say on this one, and now I'm like really thinking about it, but I think this is a reflection of the event channel still being disconnected from other marketing plans. And this wouldn't be easy if we were operating on true omnichannel marketing strategy where events were part of something and the content was purpose built. And to your point, Felicia, like some do, but many don't do this. And I think the closer we can get our meetings and events programs to be serving the objectives for a marketing function. Again, we're talking about external events that serve a lot of commercial objectives here, whether that be brand awareness or generating new sales or driving loyalty programs for your customers, right? Different phases of your customer journey, if you will. The more we can align the event programs to those objectives and understand how this is a coordinated effort with other tactics that you may be doing, like Rachel just called out, the webinars or other digital campaigns, right? Your events don't live on an island. They are serving those business purposes. You just need to have these conversations with your marketing counterparts to say, how can I help you do your job better? And conversely, they can say, how can, to the meetings and events team, how can we infuse what we're doing on our island into your island and start to make, I don't know, what are they called? Archipelagos when they're like all connected islands? But we bring all of it together and it starts to work in harmony with each other. This is also a geography lesson, everyone. We connect them, you know, we got to connect the dots. And I think part of this is a reflection of how meetings and events has so for so long lived in its own little tower, just invite people and do the things. And it really is more of a harmonious relationship with marketing than what it appears on surface. And then this becomes easy, right? That the downstream impact is like, yep, take that clip, put it into digital, take that, put it into social, take that, do a webinar with it. It's easy then.
And here's the ease of it, right? And again, here's why this is a better trend this year than last. AI, 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 right? Or tech. Let's call it tech, not even AI. So your video highlights, automation, your video and highlights can now be done through a Cident, right? They can. The on-demand editing can be done through a Cident and Events Plus. Transcribing can be done through Descript. Visuals can be done through Beautiful AI. You're just taking your same content, dumping it into different systems potentially, or even the same one, and suddenly you've got on-demand content, you've got even a podcast with Notebook LM. Please don't replace us, but it can happen that you take the transcript from Descript, stick it into Notebook LM, and suddenly you've got a podcast. It's just easier, and that's why I think these trends are trends because it's not hard to do now. You just use tech.
So it's easy to say just repurpose the content and then that's your campaign for the year for whatever it is. But I think that you can go one even further step beyond that for your events. You're already spending a ton of money on your event, right? If this is a big event where you have most of your campaigns launching or most of your themes launching for the year at that event, let's say you can also do additional things. So think through that content and what you need to use for the rest of the year. So let's just say it's a session on AI since we're It's our favorite topic. Let's say that session on AI, and let's say you paid a speaker, an AI speaker, to come and speak at your event. You're already paying them a fee. See if they'll do a podcast with you after that session. See if they'll do an interview. See if they'll do some behind the scenes video work so that you can use that to then fuel that campaign later. We do a lot of things where we record a lot of stuff at Cvent Connect and at Cvent Accelerate that have literally nothing to do with Connect. It's just because we're all there and we can get those campaigns done and filmed because we're already paying for film crews. We're already paying for these things. So you should be working very closely with your marketing team to say, what else can we get done? Like, I can't tell you the number of video interviews we've done on site that we use for other campaigns throughout the year that we film at Cvent Connect Europe or Cvent Connect US, that it doesn't have to be just that content. So it's like, yes, and kind of things. Like, what else could we do while we're there? Let's just pile it all on because we're doing 18,000 things anyway. Why not just do more?
I think it starts with that foresight though, Rachel. Like, that's a really good point. Like, you've got to have the end goal in mind. This can't be take the content and use it after the fact. Oh, just pass it off to the next team. Like, it's so lame, but it starts with the plan, right? Like, we say that with everything, but this really does start with the plan. There's a reason why you have an AI speaker at your event. What's that reason? What does that mean for your social media campaigns? What does that mean for your digital campaigns? And how might you leverage that speaker after the event? But through this point where everyone comes together and you can capture all of that content in one.
I just wanted to clarify that, because just saying, here, click here to watch our content from our event is not a campaign. I think that's the difference of this trend. Like, you need to be thoughtful about how you're using it afterwards.
Yeah, it's like, think more about the conversations that are happening at your event, whether that's the themes, the topics, the content itself, right? It's not just the PowerPoint decks that are in a session. It's like the conversation. Think about those things differently and how you want to carry that conversation moving forward.
And I want to let our audience know that we're doing that right now. Like, a whole team of people put together the Trends ebook. Now we're talking about it on a couple of podcasts and a webinar, and this content will live on, and it will go to events that we do, you know, in the first half of the year. And then towards the back end of the year, we'll start looking at, well, were those trends right? And so it just has a life. We think about our channel strategy. Those shorter videos are going to go and live on YouTube and so on and so forth. And you can download our Trends ebook. And within that, there is all sorts of other resources in the ebook about the things we've spoken about, like accessibility and so on and so forth. So we do it all the time. So we can only offer good advice.
Trying to practice what we preach here every day on the Great Events podcast. So with that, Rachel and Felicia, thank you so much for having this conversation today. I really enjoy when we're all three hosts able to communicate and exercise our brains together.
Being together is amazing. It's a great, great start to 2025.
We only get to do these few and far between throughout our year, but it's always nice when we can banter together. With that, listeners, if you missed our first episode of 2025, which recapped the first five of the trends, make sure you take a peek and listen to that episode. And to recap this week's episode, we went through four final trends for 2025, as I'm pulling up my list here right now. Trend number six was hotels and venues adopt smarter tools for data privacy. We also talked trend number seven, return on relationships, which will be an important metric in 2025. Trend number eight, technology helps event professionals adopt accessibility best practices. And lastly, what we were just talking about, trend number nine, event content fuel year-round campaigns. With that, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Stay tuned in the upcoming weeks for more content from Great Events. Have a good rest of the week.
Thanks for hanging out with us on Great Events, a podcast by Cvent. If you've been enjoying our podcast, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.
And you can help fellow event professionals and marketers just like you discover Great Events by leaving us a rating on Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform.
Stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, updates, and some extra doses of inspiration.
Got a great story or an event to share? We want to hear from you. Find us on LinkedIn, send us a DM, or drop us a note at greatevents@cvent.com.
Big thanks to our amazing listeners, our guest speakers, and the incredible team behind the scenes. Remember, every great event begins with great people.
And that's a wrap. Keep creating, keep innovating, and keep joining us as we redefine how to make events great.